Well, the sun came out for Mother's Day, 85 degrees in Seattle, so maybe you didn't spend the weekend glued to KUOW and the news on your phone. So here's some of what you missed with a little Weekend in Review panel. Wilfred Padua, Seattle-based comedian and food writer Angela Garbez, her new book, not about food, it's about pregnancy, so Mother's Day might come up again. Welcome to the both of you. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. The most read story this weekend in the New York Times was an op-ed by a University of Virginia professor called "Liberals, You're Not as Smart as You Think." Politics professor Gerard Alexander says liberals have cultural power, they snidely dismiss conservatives, and, quote, "a backlash against liberals is going to get President Trump reelected." Wilfred, what'd you think of that argument?
I unfortunately agreed with the article a lot more than I wanted to. As someone who is a liberal and someone who's clearly grown up in Seattle, I've become much more critical of liberals because that's my environment. One of the more interesting parts of the article to me was when he was mentioning the rapid growth in society and how there's a lot of like anti-racist growth that's come up and anti-bigotry that's come up. But I think people are forgetting that as that growth occurs, we forget that some people aren't growing as fast and people become condescending and so on and so forth through that. And we forget to empathize with the people that don't have as much knowledge as a liberal would.
Condescending, not empathetic. Angela, you identify as left of liberal. Would you, do you snidely dismiss conservatives?
I try to not snidely dismiss anyone, try to hear them out. But I agree with Wilfred in that I found myself sort of cringing and weirdly agreeing with some aspects of the argument. I mean, I think if I felt that Alexander's argument was genuinely to win people over, I could say it would be easier to endorse what he's saying. But, you know, he had a line that said something like self-righteousness is rarely rewarded and it's rarely attractive. And, I mean, he could have applied that to what he was writing because the whole thing dripped with condescension and was really a turnoff. So I don't think you're going to convince anyone, liberals or left of liberals or people who are critical of liberals, to come around to your point of view.
But I don't know this professor, but you're both admitting here you're in the Seattle bubble and you're saying, yeah, liberals can we're overdoing it. Let me give some examples for people who haven't read the op-ed. Just some examples that the professor threw out is that college campuses ought to let right-wingers speak and then discuss where they disagree instead of keeping them off campus. He brought up microaggressions, suggesting basically that most white people don't believe they're being aggressive and they resent the charge. He brought up President Obama's Rust Belt voters get bitter and cling to guns or religion. Are those examples in your mind of liberal elitist overreach?
Well, one of the things for me as in conversations about racism and whatnot and like trying to create a more open-minded, I guess, liberal world, conversation is the most important thing to me, as opposed to like telling someone they can't come to this college campus or telling someone that they shouldn't say a certain term. I'd rather have the mistake happen and then have the conversation about the mistake rather than just say, hey, that was you're a racist, and then stop conversation at that once that statement is made.
There's a couple I want to ask you what you think of that, Angela. There's a couple different ways that you mentioned college campuses disinviting or not inviting basically right wingers. There's also the quote unquote shouting down, the call out culture, all that's happening. What do you think of the idea that liberals are not being open to discourse, Angela?
Well, I think, you know, we should open up the discourse within the liberal, quote unquote, liberal community, right? So, so what am I trying to say here? I mean, I think who's doing the calling out? Who are these liberals that we're talking about? Are we talking about rich white liberals who, like all wealthy people, whatever your political thing is, you tend to feel entitled to power. So you feel like you can control that conversation. So I'd say even within liberal communities, there are people who are being quieted down to give voice to people who have a little more privilege as liberal people. So I think, you know, the things that they're trying to call out, racism, bigotry, those are things very, very worthy of being called out. But I think a lot of liberals could also look in the mirror and see themselves in that, you know, because we live in a racist country. That's just a fact. So everyone has some looking to do, some asking questions of themselves, and I think that there could be a conversation within the liberal community about that.
On our Facebook page, a listener named Paul writes, until conservatives can have a debate without calling someone libtard or snowflake, I don't see why liberals should be the ones required to moderate the discourse. That's a line of argument. You could also say, as the Obamas did, when they go low, you go high. And if conservatives are so bad, doesn't that mean liberals are exactly the ones who need to moderate the discourse?
I think that if liberals are going to think that we are the ones with the right answers, we need to figure out how to teach those answers to the people that aren't ready to hear it. And through that is conversation and understanding from where they're coming from.
Yeah.
Yes. I want to hit a couple other topics that came up this week. And one was gambling, because this morning, actually, the U.S. Supreme Court struck down a law that kept states from authorizing sports gambling. The challenge was brought by New Jersey. Here in Washington, our gambling laws are some of the nation's toughest. Fantasy sports companies have said they're prohibited from operating here. Angela, you're a big sports fan. So if DraftKings or a FanDuel, if you could bet on fantasy sports, would you love it?
I'm risk averse. So okay. While I love watching sports and could spend every evening doing it, I'm not prone to gambling.
Would your sports watching be diminished if you knew that people were betting? What's your favorite sport? What do we think? In Seattle, you're rooting for the what?
I'm an NBA basketball fan, which
Uh-oh.
Is a tragedy.
Wow, sorry.
Living here in Seattle. So, here's the thing. I personally don't gamble, but I know many people who do. And that's casually on individual games, sometimes larger sums than they maybe should be. And people who I know are avid fantasy players who would probably put money on it if they could. Mm. We have these strict rules, but, you know, this kind of ruling perhaps brings some friends of mine out of the shadows.
Into the light.
Yeah.
I don't gamble, but I don't think that would hurt my experience as a viewer of professional sports. I think it would actually enhance it because I'm not going to roll the dice with my money. But if my friend has money on the Celtics, I'll care about the Celtics.
The stakes are higher.
Yeah.
I mean, there's part of me that's suspicious. I think if we legalize gambling, that really there's a corporation or there's an institution that's going to benefit from this. That's
for sure.
Just taking money, taking advantage of human weakness and lining their pockets with money. But at the same time, I suppose bringing people into the light and exposing that this is an activity that people are engaging in, whether it's legal or not, it's happening.
Well, there was the famous example of the Chicago, they called them the Black Sox. This is the Chicago White Sox throwing the World Series. I swear, that must have been 100 years ago. But I was fascinated by that when I was a kid, when mm-hmm. I found out that what? Major leaguers threw the game? And there's something, some people are worried that sports, A, has integrity, B, could lose integrity if people are putting money on the game. You know, then it's just that much easier for insiders, coaches, players to be putting money on the game.
I know that NBA viewership is down from how it used to be, and I think maybe losing integrity in the NBA might make it more entertaining.
Interesting.
Yeah, because I think I miss the old days when Gary Payton used to talk trash to Michael Jordan, mm-hmm. and where people weren't such professional sports professional athletes. I kind of want more personality. I would love to see a much more flawed character.
I mean, I think sports fans like myself have had to make peace. You know, integrity, sports is not setting the high bar of integrity. You know, from college, we exploit young athletes from a young age, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the NFL makes money off of people getting severe brain damage, right? You've already made peace. The integrity argument is a little less compelling to me.
Finally on that, do you want Washington State to be just as sports bet friendly as New Jersey, Nevada? Is there something you like about being different out here? I mean, we're just less of a gambling state, although we have a lottery.
Well, I mean, I think it's cool that Jay Inslee doesn't have the same priorities as Chris Christie. So mm-hmm. I'm cool with Washington forging its own path, re gambling laws.
I could not be less invested in this.
Finally, yesterday was Mother's Day, which some people apparently don't like. There is a somewhat of a movement online to rethink Mother's Day. Angela, would you recap the issue and tell me whether you have that issue with Mother's Day?
Sure. I mean, I have complicated feelings about Mother's Day. As a mother myself, my feeling is give me a year of paid family leave instead of giving me flowers one day out of the year.
You think Mother's Day is a kind of excuse for not giving mothers more?
I mean, I think it's a way that it's like a Band-Aid that we try to put on a gaping wound, right? So
Happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day. But I think, we could definitely support mothers more day to day. That's my point about that. But I think, there's a movement or at least a conversation among mothers and people who pay attention to this issue and who think about it a lot, that people have complicated relationships both to their own mothers and to being a mother. So it's not so much let's get rid of Mother's Day. The movement that I enjoy tracking or that I am on board with is to expand it. Instead of saying Mother's Day, which ties things to one person, one entity, one gender, to celebrating Mothering Day. So you make it a verb. It doesn't exclude mothers, but it acknowledges that no one makes it through infancy or childhood without being nourished and mothered by someone. And that can include people who are not, the gestational biological parent. That can include people who are not female. That it's people who helped raise.
What about people being fathered?
Well, you
I mean,
have
you know,
a day.
We do a little child care.
You
FYI.
Have a day, yeah. And you also have a patriarchal culture. So
I see. Anyway, yeah, what do you think about Mother's Day and rethinking it, Wilfred?
I think Angela has a good point. Where maybe rethinking it to be more open. I wasn't too in tuned with this quote unquote movement that's been happening. I think movement is probably
might be a little strong.
Yes. But I think that I don't think anyone is offended that I'm celebrating my mom, or anyone is trying to stop me from celebrating my mom on one day. I mean, I give her Mother's Day because I'm not the best every other day of the year. So I go really hard.
It really does matter to a lot of people. Mother's Day is important. No one's saying that we shouldn't celebrate.
Yes, and
Mother's
Day.
Your mom deserves props.
My mom definitely deserves props, and Mother's Day is important to her. So I give her that day, and I go pretty hard on Mother's Day. And
how so? Give me one example of going hard on Mother's Day.
I drove to Kent. I mean, that.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
You're in.
Yeah. Drove to Kent and bought food. Oh, that was a lot.
I could do without schools. Pushing Mother's Day because we got that. Like my kid, and I love our school, I love the teachers, I love the staff, but my kids bring home a Mother's Day project. I did that when I was a kid.
Yeah.
We keep saying teachers are overburdened. We can take Mother's Day off the school's plate. I got it. We can handle that here.
Sometimes, I've worked in Seattle Public Schools for years, and sometimes I think that helps narrow things down for teachers with how to get the... It's a seasonal project, and it's a thing that they can do recurringly, and it
so
helps.
I see. So it's an excuse. They're just you're teaching them how to do a project, meet the deadline. There's a deadline
sure.
coming. Okay,
yeah.
Fair enough. Everybody was happy with their Mother's Day project. Angela, you have a new book just about to come out.
Yes.
Speaking of Mother's Day, but your book is about the science and culture of pregnancy.
Yes.
What? Tell us about that, would you?
Well, one of the last times I was here talking about an article that I wrote about miscarriage. Mm-hmm. We had a good conversation about that.
Yep.
And so the book is, that piece is included in that, an expanded version of it. But basically, I just feel like the way we have framed pregnancy and motherhood is we always present things in a very moral framework. Do this, don't do that. There's a right way to do things. There's a wrong way to do things. And all the books you read as a pregnant person set you up to think about things that way. And I just didn't think that was necessarily how we needed to look at things. I wanted information straight so that I could make my own decisions. So that's kind of the starting point for the book. And I had a long list of questions from miscarriage to breast milk to, can I drink wine? Why is that supposedly bad? And, why do we think of childbirth as being only natural or medicated? So I really just dove deep into a lot of emerging science, which is out there, but not necessarily reaching pregnant people. And
but don't some of us want to be told what's the right thing to do? I want to form the brain, and I want to, I want to do everything right.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I understand the desire for that, but it's just inherently more complex and nuanced like that. Mm-hmm. And people can still follow whatever advice they want, but there are a lot of people like myself who want to think critically through pregnancy and can handle complexity and nuance, and we should have the opportunity to do that. And I wanted to create a resource for people like me and my friends.
Angela Garbez, the book's coming out real soon.
May 29th.
Called?
Like a Mother, A Feminist Journey Through the Science and Culture of Pregnancy.
Angela Garbes, thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Wilfred Padua, when are you on stage in Seattle?
Oh, I'm on stage every day that I can be.
Wilfred's a comedian.
Yes, I'm a comedian. I don't know if that's been reflected in this.
That's a good thing. I've been a comedian. We have other things to have other thoughts in our brains.
May 24th, Egan's Ballard Jam House. I'll be doing a show there at 9 p.m. Otherwise, I would just say follow me on Twitter and Instagram because that's where I do all my updating of my calendar.
Wilfred Padua, thanks.
Thank you.
And thank you for tuning in to The Record on KUOW. Produced by Amina Alsadi, Allison Bruzek, Ajua Jima Brempong, Jason Pagano, social media producer Bree Ripley. Tomorrow, what if the Seahawks had run from the one and this never happened?
Oh my God, it's picked off at the goal line!
We'll answer the question. Slate's Mike Pesca's new book is upon further review, The Greatest What-Ifs in Sports History. That's tomorrow.